Join Mark and Molly Hemingway, Brian Wolfmiller, Rod Dreher, Jennifer Roback Morse, Scott Murray, and me for the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston.
And they won't ask me questions.
It's definitely interesting to read this column in The New Yorker under the Annals of Culture section. From the latest issue, How St. Augustine Invented Sex. Now, I read this, and he's writing about this church father from the 4th century, Augustine, who begins as, well, a pagan whose mother is a Christian. And if you take the New Yorker column seriously, it sounds as though Augustine grew to the great heights of the theological genius that he was, largely because he struggled throughout his life with the question of what to do with sexual arousal. Kind of a sexual reading of Augustine and his famous confessions. Is this true? Joining us to talk about this recent column from The New Yorker titled How St. Augustine Invented Sex, Pastor Heath Curtis, pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Warden, Illinois, and Zion Lutheran Church in Carpenter, Illinois. He's coordinator for LCMS Stewardship and author of the book Ordering Our Days in His Peace, An Introduction to the Christian Church Year. Heath, welcome back.
Always good to be with you, Todd.
So have I misread Augustine all these years? Is it true that Augustine, at least according to The New Yorker, is it true that his theological and spiritual formation was driven largely by his struggle to understand sexual arousal?
No. In reading this article, it's almost equal parts interesting, frustrating, insightful, and crazy. It's a very challenging piece. I mean, it is certainly true that Augustine in his Confessions talks a lot about sex and sexual ethics and marriage and family in the first chapters of Genesis. And it's true that he uses especially the corruption of human sexual desire, which if you doubt that human sexual desire is corrupted, then I don't know, I guess you just need to watch the news more and look at society around you. I mean, I think that's undeniable, and I think that's why Augustine chooses that for so much of his, so many of his examples and so much of his discussion of concupiscence. So one thing that needs to be defined, and that I think that the author of this piece misdefines, is concupiscence. Concupiscence is the corrupt inclination within human beings towards sin. So St. Paul talks about this, you know, very famously in Romans chapter 7, you know, the good I want to do, no, the evil I don't want to do, this I keep on doing. This inclination within every human heart towards sin. And St. Augustine uses that as the most powerful example within human experience to demonstrate that the goodness of God's creation that is a human being is also corrupted and twisted. Now, he could have also spoken about anger. I mean, don't you also find that anger is right there and very often seemingly out of your control, out of your will? We talk about losing your temper. We talk about, you know, tempers flaring up. And we use much the same kind of language, and we have much the same experience when it comes to sexual desire. That and Augustine does riff quite a bit on why is it that this is outside of our will, outside of our control. So the author of the piece, Dr. Greenblatt, you know, mischaracterizes Augustine as though he is saying that the problem with humanity is sexual desire. That's not what Augustine is saying. He's saying that the corrupted sexual desire is a very big indication that humanity in general is broken. And so that's one overarching problem with the piece. The author doesn't understand original sin. He says I don't want to get ahead of you the things you're interested in talking about it, but I did want to say off the start also that the piece is interesting to read. For anybody who's been into Augustine or knows something about Augustine's life, this author does take very seriously the fact that Augustine is a real human being with real hang-ups and faults. And while the title of the article, you know, Augustine and the Invention of Sex, is not accurate, many Christian authors have noted that Augustine really is, and cultural commentators, Augustine in some sense is the inventor of the modern notion of individuality. Augustine's Confessions is really the first autobiography in history that delves into the individual's inner life and thought. And in the Confessions, you get a picture of Augustine as a very conflicted individual with axes to grind and a strange upbringing. And this article does touch on those things. And for that reason, I say the article is equal parts interesting and crazy, misguided and insightful.
So when he says, and I just want you to deal with the title, How St. Augustine Invented Sex, what do you think the author is intending to say, and how would you respond to that assertion?
He's intending to say that Augustine invented the puritanical, weird, upside-down, Norman Rockwell, Victorian, Christian version of sex as bad. It is basically the charge that he's laying, obviously, not only at Augustine's feet, but at all of, you know, the Christian tradition. And this is the part of the article that I think is just nonsense. You know, for example, you know, the author doesn't do any interaction with the philosophers of Greece and Rome that are pre-Christian, who have a whole lot to say about sexual desire and how it's obviously disordered. You know, for example, just to take one example, Socrates, I'm not going to remember if it's in the Critias or at any rate, one of Plato's dialogues, Socrates mentions they're walking through the marketplace, and one of Socrates' disciples mentions, you know, is talking about sexual desire, and now, you know, that you're old and your body is failing, Socrates, you know, what do you think about this? Do you wish you were young? Do you wish you could still engage in an active sexual life and all this stuff? And Socrates says, I'm delighted to be free from those desires. So this is the kind of statement that the author would have us believe is only some weird Christian hang-up that all started in the late fourth century with Augustine. Well, this is 700 years before, almost 800 years before Augustine was active. Here is Socrates expressing, noticing the same thing about human nature, that our sexual desires are very often turned in the wrong direction, and that for the philosophical person, for the person who wants to live a higher life, get in touch with things that are deeper, more spiritual, more meaningful, which are all things Socrates is interested in, he's happy to grow old and have those days and all those regrets behind him. And so it's just, that's what's frustrating about the articles, is because while he has a lot of very interesting insights about Augustine's early life and takes him seriously as an individual, he's not placed him in any kind of proper context in the ancient world.
Pastor Heath Curtis is our guest. We're talking about a recent column in The New Yorker titled How St. Augustine Invented Sex. When we come back, we'll discuss the Genesis account, original sin, and misdirected affections.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armedforces.
We're talking about a recent New Yorker column titled How St. Augustine Invented Sex. Pastor Keith Curtis is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkins. This is Issues Etc. Pastor Curtis is pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Warden, Illinois, and Zion Lutheran Church in Carpenter, Illinois, coordinator for LCMS Stewardship, and author of the book Ordering Our Days in His Peace, An Introduction to the Christian Church Year. And as we talk about Augustine and sex and, well, the proper venue of sex, Augustine would eventually assert, is within the bounds of marriage. Marriage will be one of the subjects for the Issues Etc. 2017 Fall Making the Case Conference. In fact, Dr. Scott Murray will be making the case for Christian marriage there at the conference Friday, November the 10th and Saturday, November the 11th in Houston, Texas. Other topics at the conference include religious liberty, Christians engaging the news media, the Benedict option, the sexual revolution, and the 4U of Christianity. Registration for the November conference is $120 and includes three meals. Child care is free. You can find out more and you can register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. It's the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston, Texas. Pastor Curtis, let's deal with the issue of how the author of the New Yorker story describes Augustine's treatment of the Genesis account. He puts a pretty fine point on it, saying that no one took the Genesis account seriously or literally, except for Augustine, who does. What do you make of that assertion?
Well, this is one of the things that was so frustrating about the article. Some of these things are just, it's just nonsensical. It is certainly true that there's a long tradition before Augustine of commentators on the Christian and the Jewish scriptures. So if you're a Jew or a Christian, you both have Genesis. That he's certainly right that there are plenty of commentators who argue for a very allegorical interpretation. You know, he mentions Origen on the Christian side and Philo on the Jewish side. Absolutely true. But they're writing that, and it's all over Justin Martyr and all the Augustine's contemporaries. It's in Athanasius. Everybody's having to explain Genesis because it's clear that they were being criticized by pagans for believing it literally. And so the kind of standard interpretation of Genesis was to take it literally. And so you have, very intellectual Christians and Jews trying to explain to their pagan neighbors and almost explain away Genesis. And we still have people today, obviously, in Christian churches that do not wish to take Genesis literally, and they still have to try to explain it away because still most Christians read it and are very happy to take it at face value. So that was kind of nonsensical. And of course, you can see this most of all in the New Testament itself, where St. Paul clearly treats Adam and Eve as real live people, and where Jesus quotes the first 11 chapters of Genesis, taking it very literally, as he mentions in the days of Noah and so forth. So that was one of the things that was very very frustrating about the piece. Genesis has been and always will be and must of necessity be foundational to any Christian. It's the first book of the Bible. And it lays out the whole story, really, the foundational story of God's interaction with mankind. And so how you interpret those first 11 chapters of Genesis as literature or as fantasy, or rather, I guess we could say, what kind of literature you interpret it as, has always been a hot topic in the church. And this is one of the areas where, frankly, the author really shows that he's just not fluent with the ancient world, or specifically the period that we call late antiquity, when Christianity is getting its intellectual feet underneath it.
You say, and this is a big concept with Augustine, original sin is kind of one of the foundational concepts that Augustine works with, but you say that the author of the New Yorker piece doesn't get what Augustine was saying about original sin. How so?
He actually has a couple of paragraphs that are pretty good where he does a back and forth between how Augustine viewed it, how Pelagius viewed it. The problem with the author is that he views Augustine as the originator of the concept, which is, nonsensical. And just read the book of Romans and you'll get or Ephesians chapter 2, and you'll get plenty of notions about sin being inbred in humans and nobody does what is right and so forth. Pelagius is clearly the innovator with his notion that there's no need for any human being to, you know, there's no necessity that human beings are going to sin, that if you just tried hard enough, you wouldn't have to sin. Even before baptism, before the Holy Spirit gives you new desires, you can keep the law by nature. That's clearly the innovation. It doesn't take much historical awareness to understand that that is the case. But where the author goes wrong, the second place he goes wrong, is identifying, he wants to coalesce, original sin and disrupted sexual desire. It's as if he's claiming that St. Augustine is saying original sin is the desire to have sex. And that's not true. St. Augustine talks a lot about, again, as I mentioned in my opening comments, talks a lot about and uses corrupted sexual desire as a very clear example of what he means by concupiscence, of this broken, twisted, inward nature of humanity that is turned toward sin. Now, we should also give credit where it's due. Luther also has a lot of bad things to say about Augustine, and especially about Jerome, a contemporary of Augustine, when it comes to their view of sexual desire within marriage. The author is right to criticize these 4th century fathers for their view as marriage as almost inherently sinful because it includes sex, or almost inherently second class because it includes sex. Jerome is here a worse offender than Augustine, but Luther has no problem in calling, you know, all of the monastic movements to account in the same regard. The problem is that sexual desire is corrupted along with all of our other desires and is one of the most powerful desires in humanity. It experiences the most corruption and causes the most damage. But Luther and the Reformers are very apt to point out that sexual desire finds its appropriate place in marriage and that that is good within marriage. And that if the sexual, and the one reason God leaves marriage intact after the fall, it's one thing that carries over from before fall to after the fall, is that marriage is one God-given way to direct our sexual energies in the appropriate and godly fashion. And in that sense, marriage after sin really does achieve a new importance as curbing and controlling now the broken and misguided desires that are within humanity. So marriage, even though it's a pre-fall, but it also becomes even more important after the fall, precisely because we're broken and precisely because we need to have our desires taught and trained in godliness.
The author of the New Yorker piece seems ignorant, at least from my reading, of a pretty important concept in Augustine's thought with respect to sin. And that is, Augustine understood sin, at least in part, as he would have said, disordered loves or misdirected affections. Talk about that, if you would.
Yeah, you know, in general, the author has simply collapsed as if all sexual desire is wrong and bad and is the source of sin and so forth. And again, I want to give credit where it's due. The Reformers also criticize the monastic fathers in their view of, in the most extreme form in Jerome and Lactantius, as there's pretty much no such thing as a good sexual desire. Now, Luther and the Reformers are happy to say that all human desires are going to be tainted with sin, but that the natural love between man and woman that finds its expression within marriage is a good desire that is corrupted. And so, yes, you're exactly right, that Augustine treats actually all of our desires in this way. And that when you see the word concupiscence, you see, you read that as sexual desire, you're missing the whole boat of all of Augustine's theology. Because that concupiscence, which the straight up English translation of that would be desire, is that our desires for everything have been corrupted. So this natural love that I should have for justice can be corrupted into self-serving anger. Or this natural desire that I have, that God has placed within me, for my wife, can be corrupted into lust for any number of people. And that even, you know, Augustine in his On Christian Doctrine speaks at length about every sin is really a disordered love. Every sin, if that sin has no being of its own. Sin is a corruption in good things. So, because God did not create an evil. Evil itself is a lack or a disruption in something good. So lust is clearly a disruption of the good natural desire for husband and wife. Sinful anger is clearly a corruption of the love for justice and fairness and so forth. You go through every sin and identify the good thing of which that sin is a corruption.
Before we let you go, Pastor Curtis, what can you tell us about LCMS stewardship?
We teach pastors and congregations where to, I'm trying to segue this for you, where to appropriately place their loves and where to appropriately place their desires for the good things of God. And so especially if you're a pastor of a congregation, and we all do, we all wonder, how are we going to faithfully support the ministry? We want to teach you where to put that in a good, solid theological foundation as part of the Christian life, part of the vocation that God has given us as Christians. So let's see, coming up now, we just did one of our big stewardship retreats with Doxology, our More Than Giving conference. We just did that up in Donaldson, Indiana. Our next one is in September in Buffalo, Minnesota. So folks can go to doxology.us to find out more about that. And they can go always to lcms.org/stewardship to get all of our resources for your weekly bulletin, for your monthly newsletter, for your stewardship program. You can find out how we can come out and do a stewardship workshop out in your Winkle for a pastor's conference. So all kinds of good stuff at those two websites.
Pastor Heath Curtis is pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Warden, Illinois, and Zion Lutheran Church in Carpenter, Illinois, coordinator for LCMS Stewardship, and author of the book Ordering Our Days in His Peace, an introduction to the Christian Church. Here, find a link to that at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Heath, thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
Joy Pullman is with us on the other side of the break. We're going to talk about, well, what she's called millennial self-care and narcissism. She's managing editor of The Federalist. We'll talk about the millennials and their borderline narcissism right after this.
At Risen Christ Lutheran Church in Arvada, Colorado, we have simply become captivated by the hilarious notion that God has sent His Son, Jesus Christ, into the world to save the losers of this world, losers just like us. We proclaim the biblical notion that God saves sinners. Embracing the historic liturgy of the church, we confess that we are just that, sinners. Visit us online at risenchristlutheran.org.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Are you a homeschool parent looking for help teaching certain subjects? Or do you want your student to study the history, languages, and literature of Western civilization? Memoria Press Online Academy has live online classes with master teachers to help you. Their teachers have years of experience teaching, delighting, and moving students literally from all around the world. Your homeschool year doesn't have to be difficult. Visit memoriapressacademy.com or call 877-745-8866.
If you've ever attended an Issues Etc. conference or any number of events that take place across the Senate and have wondered why more people from my congregation aren't here, check out the special seminar package the CLCC is offering for the 500th anniversary. All you need so the pastors of your circuit can organize, promote, and present a seminar that appeals to the members of your congregation, even the youth, is provided free by the CLCC. Just go to theclcc.org and click on the blue box, or check us out on Facebook.